Welcome to Extreme Jeans on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Hey, welcome back, Jeanies. It is Extreme Jeans, Family History Radio, ExtremeJeans.com. I am your radio root sleuth, Fisher, and we have a lot going on this week. First of all, in about 9 minutes, I'll be talking to a man whose photograph of the father he lost when he was 7 months old took him on a remarkable journey, which resulted in all kinds of unexpected and very positive events. Wait till you hear this one. Plus, North America's biggest family history conference is coming up in just a few weeks. No matter where you are, you can be a part of it. We'll explain as guests from FamilySearch.org map out what's happening with Roots Tech 2014 later in the show. Have you seen the movie Philomena yet? I caught it last week, and it stars Judi Dench and is in many ways an ultimate family history story as the lead character Philomena, late in her life, goes looking for the son she was forced to give up in Ireland 50 years earlier. What makes it particularly intriguing is that the story is true. Those are always the best kind, aren't they? Certainly in family history. All right, our Extreme Jeans fine line is toll-free 1-234-56-JEANS. That's 1-234-56-JEANS, G-E-N-E-S. You can call it 24-7 with your stories, comments, and questions, and we're always happy to get back to you. Now for this week's Family Histoire News. There's nothing like an heirloom to remind you of whoever it was you received it from. Generally, they're not worth much except sentimentally. Sometimes they're quite valuable. And when they are, sometimes you don't know it. Well, that's why an unnamed Idaho man took an etching that once belonged to his grandfather for a visit to the Antiques Roadshow, which had come to town. He explained that his grandfather had once belonged to the New York Society of Etchers and had a collection he started in the early 20th century. Well, the piece the man brought onto the show was signed by a guy named Edward Hopper. The visitor to the show had been around the piece his entire life, never realizing that Hopper was a highly renowned artist. He was a prominent realist painter and printmaker, best known for his paintings of individuals in various scenes, such as being alone at night or eating in a diner. Bottom line, the man owns an etching worth about $250,000. Yeah, $250,000. And only 25 copies of that particular print were made. The owner remarked, "That's more money than belongs in my living room." He's probably right. But certainly he's thanking his long-deceased grandpa these days for a windfall he never expected. You can see the PBS video of the entire exchange on our website, ExtremeJeans.com. And if you're listening to our show today via podcast, you may need to search our site to find it. Put in keyword antiques. Our next story comes from the Antarctic Heritage Trust of New Zealand. They report that photographic negatives left a century ago in Captain Robert Falcon Scott's last expedition base at Cape Evans have been discovered and conserved by New Zealand's Antarctic Heritage Trust. The negatives were found in expedition photographer Herbert Ponting's darkroom and have been painstakingly conserved, revealing never-before-seen Antarctic images. These are amazing. The Trust conservation specialist discovered the clumped-together cellulose nitrate negatives in a small box as part of the Ross Sea Heritage Restoration Project, which has seen more than 10,000 objects conserved at Scott's Cape Evans hut. The negatives were removed from Antarctica by the Trust earlier this year. Detailed conservation treatment back in New Zealand separating the negatives has revealed 22 images. The photographs are from Ernest Shackleton's Ross Sea Party from 1914 to 1917, which spent time living in Scott's hut after being stranded on Ross Island when their ship blew out to sea. One of the most striking images is of the Ross Sea Party member Alexander Stevens, Shackleton's chief scientist, standing on board the Aurora. Although many of the images are damaged, the Antarctic Heritage Trust was able to recognize landmarks around McMurdo Sound, although the identity of the photographer remains unknown. How amazing that must be for descendants of that party to learn of these pictures of their ancestors. They're incredible for anyone to look at. You'll want to see them. We have the link. Go to ExtremeJeans.com to check them out. And finally, Kleenex alert! A 71-year-old woman has received quite a holiday gift, courtesy of the Baltimore Sun. Margaret Ann Wolf Harris of Catonsville, Maryland, was only 17 months old when her father was killed in World War II. She has no memory of him, of course. Not long ago, the Sun discovered an old box in a storage room wrapped in rope that contained an old broadcast record. It was created in England just before the holidays in 1943, featuring interviews with servicemen from the mid-Atlantic area. The Sun arranged for the 70-year-old recording to be broadcast in the area last Christmas. Among people hearing voices of their relatives was Margaret Ann, who heard the voice of her father for the very first time. He was killed only 3 weeks after the program was aired in a bombing raid over Germany. He even mentioned her by name in the piece, giving her a gift that left her speechless. And us too. And coming up next, I'll talk to a man who lost his dad when he was only 7 months old, and the single photo of his father that took him on a worldwide adventure. Wait till you hear the story of Bill Elliott. Next on Extreme Genes, Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Welcome back to Extreme Genes, Family History Radio. It is Fisher here, along with my good friend Bill Elliott, who have we known each other, like 3 or 4 years now, Bill?
Oh, it goes way back, yeah, at least 20
years. Yeah, we went to high school together. Anyway, Bill used to work for NBC years ago, has traveled the world, and you started out your life in a very difficult circumstance. You want to describe that?
Well, yeah. Let me tell you that my dad, Captain Arthur Elliott, was a pilot. He was a war hero in World War II and Korean War. He flew fighters and bombers. He won the Distinguished Flying Cross. And I know this because there was a military record, and I have his medals. But he never kept any records of his own. And what I know about him really was just from that. If you really want to live forever, then try keeping a journal, because I would love to have something that he'd actually written.
Sure.
When I was about 5 months old, he was 35. He was based out of Charleston, South Carolina. He was unfortunately killed in an accident. And my mom remarried and moved on and pretty much lost contact with the Elliott family over the years. And
so your dad's side, you had no contact with.
Yeah, I grew up not really knowing much or anything about my dad or that side of the family. And it was something that was left a void in my life pretty much at all times. And then it was Halloween week, 1979, and I was doing some family history work for my dad, finding some stuff out, and I just felt this prompting, like, I need to find something out about my dad. And it was Halloween day, and I tried calling my sister, and I tried calling my mom, and I was away at college. And then suddenly, my mom said, well, call your aunt, your dad's sister. I'm like, I don't even know her. She got me a phone number. I called her. She said, well, I don't know what you're looking for. Try calling your uncle, my dad's brother, Floyd.
Did you know
so
him?
I didn't have his number either. I'd met him once when I was 12.
Okay.
So I got his number. I called Floyd, and he goes, I can't believe you're calling. It's a miracle. He said, did you know you had a half-sister? I said, what? he said, yeah, your dad was married before your mom, and he had a daughter. She's about 10 years older than you. And when they divorced, the mom took her and eventually passed away and was legally adopted by her maternal grandmother. And she had been searching for our side of the Elliots for years. And she had called him that very day, having found an old article that mentioned the death of our father and listed surviving family members. And he said, you have family, but I don't know where they are. So he gave me her number. I called her Halloween night. I said, hello, is this Lynn Elliott? She goes, yes. I said, well, this is your brother, Bill Elliott. There was a gasp and the phone dropped.
Thanks. I can hear the thing clanging against the side of a wall.
Yeah.
Back in 79. Wow.
It was amazing, and she was only living an hour from us in Southern California and has a family resemblance, and we've stayed close ever since. So, you know, my search for my father and information about him continued. I went to Arlington Cemetery, where he's buried, and visited his gravesite. I was on business on a film shoot in Charleston, South Carolina. I was looking for the house listed on my phone, on my birth certificate, but the address was like 3 digits, and I went to the street. And there were 5-digit numbers. So I went knocking doors until finally a guy answered the door, and he said, oh, yeah, I remember your dad. He lived next door here. I was a pilot, too. And so he told me a little bit about my dad and the house and where we'd lived when I was a child before he died.
And this was right across the street from it. So he was able to point out where you were born into.
Yes, exactly. And it was just, you know, knocking doors and happened to find this guy who was a retired Air Force pilot. And then around 2002, my sister found and restored an old picture of my dad standing on the street somewhere in uniform in maybe Europe or something. And I wanted to know the story behind the photo. So I blew it up. I looked closely, and across the street behind him, you could see a hotel. It said Ayrshire Galloway Hotel.
Hmm.
So I sent it to a friend of mine in London. He said, that's Scotland. So I sent it to the Scottish Tourist Bureau. And they wrote me back and they said, absolutely, that's Robert Burns Square in Ayr, in the Ayrshire County in Scotland. And they said that Prestwick Air Base, which is now Prestwick Airport, was the military air base where air transport, which my dad was flying after the war, would have stopped. And he would have spent probably the night there and maybe at that very hotel had a meal that was in the background of that picture. So it gave me some information about my dad that I didn't know, and I learned about his world in military air transport flying from South Carolina.
It's been a tough go, hasn't it, Bill, to get information on him?
It has been. It seems like years go by with nothing, and then suddenly I get this breakthrough, so you never give up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that led to 2004 when I was in London working on a show with Ewan McGregor, and I was talking to Ewan, and I said, listen, I told him the story about my dad, and he said, you should go up to Ayrshire. It's not that far from here. He's from Scotland. He knows the area. So I sent a note to the Tourist Bureau of Scotland, and they said, absolutely, come up. They, matter of fact, they flew me up the next day.
What? They and sent a plane down for you?
I just local airline.
Okay.
And but they made arrangements, and I had one free day, and so they flew me up there, and as I flew in to Prestwick Airport, I could imagine coming over the water that this is exactly what my dad saw when he flew in here.
Yes.
They picked me up at the airport. They took me into Robert Burns Square, and the town really hadn't changed much in 50 years. And they had a photographer there from the local newspaper, and they recreated the photo of my dad standing on the street. And literally, I was standing in his footsteps, only separated by time. And it was a magical moment to be there. And I felt so close to him, probably closest I've ever felt as we stood there and then went and had lunch at that restaurant in the hotel. It's in the background, that Ayrshire Galloway Hotel.
Unbelievable. What an experience. But it doesn't end there.
No, it doesn't. Well, they wrote an article for the paper, and I had some wonderful letters and emails from people over there. One person recognized the old couple that were in the background crossing the street as their parents that had passed away years ago.
Wait a minute. This is a 50-year-old picture, and they saw their parents walking around in the background.
Yes.
Oh,
and
that's
they recognized
funny.
It, and they wrote the newspaper, and they wrote me and sent me the note. And then they decided a few years later to do another article. And they decided to do the town of Ayr to do a nostalgia weekend based on the 40s era, based on my story of finding my dad and his story of being there. So they had a whole weekend of big band music, of carnival, of food, and people dressing up in 40s outfits. And they ran the story again about my dad and his spending his time there and my efforts to find family history there. And it was just the most amazing thing. I have this kinship with these people in the little town of Ayr in Ayrshire.
Right.
And all from doing a little family history.
Isn't that amazing? The one thing that leads to the next, it starts with a photo and you blow it up so you can see what's in the background.
Yep.
Get a feel. And then you've got this celebrity, Ewan McGregor, saying, oh, you got to go up there. You
exactly.
Got to look
That's
around.
What he sounded like.
Yeah.
Wait, that sounded more like Shrek.
Yeah, well, or it's more like Sean Connery. Anyway, so you went up there and you've had all these experiences. Have you been back since? Because that was a while ago.
I have not, but an interesting thing happened. I was talking to my sister-in-law the other day, and I told her this story. She'd never heard it. I showed her the picture. She looked at it. She said, do you know what my maiden name was? I said, no. She says, Galloway. That's my family's hotel in the background. As I've continued to do family history, I've discovered some amazing things. You know, when I started out, I mentioned that if you want to live forever, write a family history or a journal.
Sure, a journal, yes.
I would love to have anything written by my father, but I have nothing, and I've spent my whole life trying to fill the void. And then I connected family history and Eliot's back through Iowa to Ohio to Virginia to England, and I came across an online journal of one of my ancestors who wrote about Thomas Eliot, who came from London in 1724 on the ship Angolio, bound for Virginia. They shipwrecked off the coast. They made it safely, and the Eliot line was established there.
Because of the shipwreck?
Yes.
I think we'll stay here.
And the little town of Accomack on the peninsula outside of Virginia. And they kept a journal, and there's this whole story of the voyage and what it was like. And I thought, wow, that's how you get to know your family forever, is to be able to write down your story and then let it be shared for generations.
So now how far back does this immigrant ancestor go? Is it your fourth grade, fifth?
This is seventh great-grandfather, Thomas Eliot. And in this journal that was written, he mentioned that his father in London, in England, was John Eliot, and his father's father was Charles Eliot and then William Eliot. So it gets me back about 9, 10
That is fantastic. And then, of course, hopefully you can extend it from there. But you actually probably now know more about them than you do your own dad.
I do, because somebody took time to write it down. And my dad was just busy being a pilot and living life and, you know, never thinking at the age of 35 that his time would be cut short. But I'm grateful for the journey I've had in discovering his path, and that has led me to my grandfather and to my father's father and on from there.
And all the way back in the whole line. And, you know, the nice thing is now your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids will have all this information because you got at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, you just never want to give up. Never give up. Just one more quick thing. My father's mother, Cora Bell Poe, I found out she was from southern Missouri, right in the Ozarks there. I had found nothing on her family until one day I finally got a birth certificate of one of her other kids, my grandmother's other kids, and it showed that she was born in this little town, Udall, Missouri, which doesn't even exist anymore. And I picked up the phone and I started calling different places I found listed for that area of Udall, Missouri. I got the boat dock, I got the diner. And then I got some woman whose last name was Elliot, and I said, my grandmother was Cora Bell Poe, and I'm just looking for, or her name is Poe, and any relatives? And she goes, oh, Auntie Cora, I remember her. Her husband was a nephew of my grandmother, and she lives on the family farm there to this day, and I've been to visit her in that area of southern Missouri on the Poe Ranch.
And so she's filled you in on all kinds of stories about your grandmother's side.
Yes, and I went to the cemetery, and I got all these great information, and she said, we're actually even distantly connected to Edgar Allan Poe. My kids were thrilled. They started studying English more once they learned that and writing stories.
Did you bring home a raven to keep in the house?
Yeah, just a picture. It was kind of eerie, though, because there were some weird-looking birds as I was walking through this graveyard at night, but
wow.
It was fun.
Wow, what an adventure, Bill, and thank you so much for taking the time to share it with us. And it's really inspiring, certainly for people who, you know, have struggled maybe for many years and just can't get anywhere, to hear that, you know, doors do open over time.
Yeah, I mean, this has been 30, 40 years I've been searching for this stuff and finding it a little bit of a time. So never give up.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.
You betcha. Take care, Fish.
And coming up next, it's the biggest family history convention in North America, and it's happening in early February. Our special guest will tell you all about it and how you can participate in it no matter where you are. Coming up next on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. You have found us, Extreme Genes, Family History Radio. Fisher here, your radio root sleuth, with a couple of great guests I'm excited to have in the studio, Bruce Brand and Paul Nada, all ready to go with Roots Tech 2014 in just a few weeks. And Paul, tell us what's going to be the highlight of this show.
We're really excited for Roots Tech 2014 this year. We've got some great keynote speakers, including Ree Drummond, known as the Pioneer Woman.
What does that mean? I saw that, the Pioneer Woman. I'm sorry, I thought they were all deceased by now.
Ree is very much alive and kicking. And for those that watch her on the Food Network, she's got over 20 million followers. She'll be our opening day keynote speaker, and she's going to share how recipes and cookbooks are very much a part of family traditions and family heirlooms, and
love
how
that
stories are enriched and perpetuated and valued as part of family history, and how those should be preserved and shared and integrated.
You know, for those who aren't familiar with Roots Tech around the country, let's start with when it is, where it is. Can people still get to it? Can they still be a part of it? And if not, is there a way to do so remotely?
Absolutely. Roots Tech is an annual conference hosted by Family Search. It's held in Salt Lake City every year. This year it's going to be February 6th through 8th at the Salt Palace Convention Center.
Okay.
Registration is still open, so if you live within an area that you can attend Roots Tech, we highly suggest that you do that. We're expecting over 10,000 attendees.
Wow.
This year, so it's the largest conference of its kind in North America. And the focus of Roots Tech is a little different in that attendees come to learn how they can connect with their family, past, present, and future, by learning how to preserve and share the stories and the memories and photos of their family that will be as highly treasured today as they will be 100 years from now.
You know, you are so right. I think a lot of people, it's been my experience, they tend to downplay the value of their own lives to their descendants. Oh, nobody's going to care what I did. You know, we see that all
Absolutely.
The time. And I think a lot of people really will.
Right.
And it's amazing the little things that make such a difference in preserving memories and keeping traditions alive going forward.
Yeah, I often ask people, you know, how many people knew their great-grandparents? Very, very few people ever knew their great-grandparents.
Right.
And I would ask them, how much would you value to have just one letter from a great-grandparent where they wrote about what was important to them or what they valued or what a day in their life was like? Unanimously across the room, everyone will raise their hand. How valued that would be, how much they would appreciate that. You're going to be a great-grandparent. You're a great-grandparent in the making.
Right.
You just will never know your great-grandchildren.
But, you know, I tell people, there are a lot of future dead people here. You've got to do something to be remembered.
There you go. Or how would you like to be remembered?
Sure.
You have the opportunity to preserve how you would like to be remembered.
Yeah, that's
We have
great.
The tools to do that today, and we've got the foresight.
So Roots Tech is going to be, what are the dates again?
February 6th through 8th is okay. when the core conference is, and then there's a Innovator Summit on the Wednesday before, February 5th, and we'd like to speak to that a little bit as well.
Sure.
But Roots Tech itself is February 6th through 8th, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday in Salt Lake City.
Now, I'm looking forward to it. I've got a booth there for Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, and I know many others will. How many booths are there at this point?
Over 200 booths.
Excellent. And I'll tell you, last year was the first time I went. It was only, what, the third, second?
That was the third annual conference.
The first time I'd attended, and I saw stuff there that still sticks in my head that I can't believe people came up with. For instance, the software to match photographs of different people in their lives to say this is the same person or this is likely not.
Absolutely.
I mean, what a great piece that was. And there were several other things that you look at and you go, where did this come from? And that, of course, goes back to your innovators.
It really is. That's one of the
summit.
Unique things about this conference. It was originally created always with that focus in mind to connect families with the past, present, and future through stories and photos. However, there's a unique element of it, and that is we make an effort to bring in the developers of technology. And what we have found is that it becomes very influential at proliferating new products and
yes.
growing the industry and increasing the great experiences that end users will have.
Well, you know, part of the joy of it, it's so cheap, too. I mean, it's not an expensive thing to do. For people. And I've noticed how many people are just out there. Here's the product. Take it. A lot of free yeah. stuff all the time because they see it as a great service for families.
Exactly. It really is underpriced, but we do that on purpose. If you were to compare the content from Roots Tech and the world-class production that this is compared to others in the industry, you would find that it is a fraction of the cost. And that's exactly why we do it. We want it to be accessible to families so that you can bring multiple members of your family to the show. So there are single-day passes, all-day passes, and there's even a free day on Saturday that has a lot of family-oriented tracks and content so the family can come out and enjoy lots of wonderfully rich free activities and presenters as well.
That's awesome. And we're seeing, of course, a lot of growth among younger people getting into this now. Do we have some folks who are going to be addressing that?
There are some great youth speakers, but the amazing thing is the youth today are so wired for technology that they don't really need to have their own set of speakers, per se. They, you tell them that here's a Facebook application or presentation on how to use Facebook to share your family stories, memories, photos. The youth are there right in with the adults, but there will be, particularly on Saturday, lots of youth-oriented production.
Okay, now for those people who are a little, shall we say, unskilled in technology, I know there's got to be a lot of effort there to help bring people up to speed so they could take advantage of all this great new stuff.
Absolutely. There is an entire Getting Started track. So if you were to go to rootstech.org and look for the Getting Started schedule, you'll see that every day there is a coded set of classes for those just getting started that feel like they are novices to all of this. So they should not shy away from technology. Check out the Get Starting track. You'll find out there's a full list of options throughout every day.
So here's a question for you then. For people, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are not going to be able to attend. They're far away and they're very interested in this stuff. How do they get to participate in Roots Tech 2014?
Very good question. We will have some select sessions during each day throughout the day that we will be broadcasting live for free online. So if you can't make it to RootsTech, there will be a sampling of our presenters and classes that we will offer online. So go to RootsTech.org Thursday, February 6th, and you can see the list of classes that day that will be
broadcast live. Wow. And that's free?
That's free. Those will be broadcast free.
All right. Bruce Brand, you're involved with a certain pre-show for RootsTech, which is called the Innovator Summit. We touched on it just a little bit here with Paul. Tell us about this.
Yeah, great question, Fisher. So what's happened in the past years with RootsTech, there's been a developer day. So developer day was a time for those software developers or other innovators to get together. And we've made a big change this year. We expanded it beyond just the techies, the programmers, to include business people or people who just have ideas. People who have a better way to present family history information, a better way to make it easy to navigate, or some ideas that might be all new.
So is this a discussion or is this a display or how does the public interact with this?
So the way it works is on Wednesday, the day before the traditional RootsTech begins, which is Thursday through Friday, Wednesday the 5th, there'll be about 17 sessions that day. There'll be a keynote at 11 with a lunch with a gentleman by the name of Chris Dancy, just a fascinating guy. He describes himself as the world's most quantified man. And it's just a fascinating guy. He keeps track of everything from his online presence to actually with his phone where he goes geographically, his heart rate, he wears one of these bands. It's just fascinating. But
wait a minute. I thought it was enough to carve your name in a tree to say I lived. That's amazing.
And it's interesting. His session, his keynote session, is going to be titled Facebook of the Dead. And the idea is, as we go forward, the things we capture on social media will become the history of our lives.
That's right.
You know, and that concept of what we want to remember, what would our grandchildren want us to tweet to them or to put on our Facebook page for them? And what are we doing today to kind of capture that and make sure the most important things are available? So just to kind of sum up, Innovator Summit is an opportunity for entrepreneurs, software developers, and innovators in general to be able to integrate and collaborate their ideas. And it actually runs not just that Wednesday the 5th, but it also has sessions that go Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
So it continues right through.
Right. And some of our key speakers, in addition to Chris Dancy, include, for example, Sid Tetreault, who's an entrepreneur in residence with Disney okay. organization, as well as a couple individuals from Google, and a gentleman who's with a very large family history organization called Archives.com that was right. recently purchased by Ancestry.com about a year ago. So he'll be telling his story of going from a very small company to a company that was purchased for $100 million by Ancestry. So that kind of gives you a little better flavor of kind of the breadth of what will be covered.
Well, guys, Paul, Bruce, thank you so much for coming. I can't wait. I'm going to be meeting a lot of people there and a lot of you, and so we're looking forward to it and seeing what more we can learn and how we can break down some of those walls because there are big cities behind them. You ever notice that? Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks.
And coming up next, are you duplicating, replicating, or copying? You better know the difference. Preservation Authority Tom Perry will tell you the difference. Coming up next on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio, ExtremeGenes.com. I am Fisher, and Genies, we have the Preservation Authority Master here, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. Welcome back, Tom.
It's good to be here.
What do you have for us today?
Well, first off, to follow up the other segment on RootsTech, we're going to have what we call the TMC Island there. We're going to have about the equivalent of six booths. It will be called booth number 131, which will be right across from your booth.
Yes.
And we're going to have a little theater there. On Marlowe, the engineer guy will be there with us. We're going to have a little theater where you can come, and we will teach you how to use your iPod and your iPhone and different things to make real easy family history treasures. Of course, there's no charge. Stop by and see us. It'll be wonderful.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I am so looking forward to RootsTech.
And also something that was really fun, CES, which is the Consumer Electronics Show, just finished up, and we've talked about 3D printers and things like that.
Okay, let's pick it up.
We've talked about 3D printers. Now, something was really cool this year. They have 3D printers now that print in sugar.
What?
Yeah, they actually.
What does that mean?
You can make these things that go on top of cakes. You can make all kinds of confectioneries. And the detail is absolutely incredible. It's like making a doily out of sugar.
So you could take an old family artifact or a treasure and duplicate it in sugar and then share them with the kids who can
literally
eat, who can eat them.
Literally.
Oh, that's great.
You can. I mean, they were making things that looked like origami that was out of sugar. It's absolutely amazing. Now, the bad side to it, these things are about $100,000, but they're full color.
Right. Yeah. Well, they ought to be.
That's right. Then later this year.
And you ought to be able to drive them, too.
Exactly. Yeah. And clean all your dishes and
yes.
things like that. Clean up after themselves. But just as a consolation, there will be a black and white version coming out later in this year that will only be $50,000.
Ah, but a lot of people, though, businesses will be able to use those,
buy those,
and then you'll be able to go through. And, for instance, we had talked when we discussed 3D printers some time back. We talked about, for instance, a fireman's medal from the 19th century that belonged to my great-grandfather. You could actually duplicate that on the 3D printer, but the idea that you could make them in sugar is hysterical.
Oh, it is. It's really funny. You can actually eat what you create. So it's a lot of fun. One thing that we've heard a lot of questions on, asktom@tmcplace.com, they say, what's the difference between taking a CD or a DVD and making copies versus duplicates versus replications? They say, I'm confused. Which is which? And we understand that. We have people calling saying, I need to replicate one disc. You don't replicate one disc. When you replicate, you usually make 1,000 discs or more. These ones are actually stamped out like a Disney DVD would be. If you're doing copies, those are what you do at home. You do one here, one here, one here. Now, the disadvantage to that is you're adding artifacts from your computer that you're using because you're using your OS. When you go to a duplication, all it is zeros and ones. There's nothing else that's put on there. It's just zeros and ones. It's almost like making another master of your duplicate.
Well, that's a great question and a great answer. When we come back, what are we going to talk about, Tom?
Alphabet soup.
All right. Back to it. The files, what you use, which different formats for all kinds of preservation on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Welcome back. Extreme Genes Family History Radio. It is Fisher here with Tom Perry, our preservation authority. Tom, alphabet soup. This is where we kind of straighten out everything about what formats to use for your preservation for photos, slides, for home movies, for videos. What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about RAWs, PNGs, CMYKs, RGBs.
Stop it.
TIFs, GIFs.
Stop it. Stop it. All right. Let's one thing at a time. You better take notes, people. He's very annoying that way. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, first off, let's talk a little bit about scanning, kind of a follow-up to what we spoke about a few weeks ago. People are a little bit confused of when they're scanning. It says full color, CMYK, or black and white. How do you want to scan? And I always suggest people to always scan in CMYK or full color, which even if you're doing black and white pictures, you want to do that.
Now, is that an option that comes with your scanner and your software?
Exactly. I have never seen software that didn't give you the option to scan in color or black and white. And I don't know why you'd really want to scan in black and white unless you're just doing type.
Or you're looking for an effect, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. If everything's always going to say black and white, never edited, nothing like that, then that's probably okay if it's black lines. If it's photographs, we call them black and white, but they're really not. They're grayscale. And so if you scan it in black and white, you're going to lose some detail. So I always scan everything in color. It gives you a lot bigger file. If you do want to go in and edit, have parts that are cut out or torn and fix them up, like in some of the stuff that you've had where
right,
a mustache
Photoshop.
Was missing. Exactly, Photoshop. It gives you a bigger box, so to speak, to edit with. So always scan in color. And then people say, well, I'm confused. What's CMYK and what's RGB? Well, RGB stands for red, green, and blue. Anything that's like optical, like a television monitor, your TV at home, anything that has basically light behind it is RGB, red, green, and blue. You add red, green, and blue together, and oddly enough, you get white.
Huh.
So if you get real close to your television and you see somebody walking across the screen in a white dress, if you look really, really close, you'll see all three dots, red, green, and blue, all lit up at the same time to make that white.
I had no idea. I'm going to do that.
So it's called additive color. You add the three colors together to get white. Now, CMYK stands for cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. Those are subtractive colors. You take those colors away to get white. For instance, a magazine is printed in CMYK. When you print out on your color printer from your computer, it's CMYK. So a lot of times people say, well, do I create something in RGB or do I create it in CMYK? And I say it all depends on what your end result is going to be. If you're working on something that is going to be in a magazine, you want to go CMYK. If you're going to make something to go on your website, you want it to be an RGB because it has light behind it.
Would this include some of these published books that you can order online? Would
oh,
you make
absolutely.
Those choices?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime something's going to be printed, physical print, you're going to hold in your hand. I don't mean an iPod, but like a book, you always want to go in CMYK because those are the colors the publisher is going to use to create your project.
Like so a Shutterfly project or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the thing is, if you create an RGB, they're going to have to go and do a conversion. and their conversion of their colors may not be what you really wanted, especially if it's original art or something you're designing. So if you're working in Photoshop, you want to make sure you're working in CMYK if that's what your end result is going to be, to get a better, you know, understanding of what you see is what you get type thing.
Hey, that wraps it up for this week. We're getting ready for Roots Tech. We'll talk to you again next time on Extreme Genes Family History Radio. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family. Thanks for listening to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Find out who you are at FamilySearch.org.